everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you in the driver's seat. Tom Fairbanks on the other side of the glass. Tom, I was hoping for more when the rain started, but up in our area by the Buckmaster bungalow, at least when I was driving in, there was not a lot. Maybe just enough to wet the pavement. I don't know.
I'll bet the folks out at the golf tournament, the Color Guard golf tournament, are not very happy about today's weather.
Well, we need that rain so much. And it was just, it was kind of a drizzle. I know some places had down in Sonoyta have had like a tenth of an inch and even some snow flurries. And there is some.
Well, have you seen the
Catalinas?
Up on the Catalinas?
Yes.
There's a little bit of dusting up there.
A white dusting on the Catalinas. It is Friday. It's the 7th of March, 2025. The Buckmaster Show coming to you from central Tucson in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studios, part of the Bustos Media Broadcast Center, where we've got five radio stations now under one roof. This one's 1030 KVOI, Tucson's trusted voice for live news and talk. In January, we began our 15th year with our radio program, and now my 37th year in Tucson radio and TV. We have our worldwide listening, all of our podcasts available at buckmastershow.com. And when we do our telephone interviews, that's 790-2040. And folks are always invited to call in with a comment or a question. The live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Our media partners, TucsonSentinel.com, the Green Valley News, and Saharita Sun. And our newest partner is Tucson Spotlight, an online newsletter started a couple of months ago by Caitlin Schmidt and Susan Barnett, two former Arizona Daily Star reporters. And they are off and running and doing a great job with Tucson Spotlight. And Caitlin joins me now in studio. Hey, Caitlin, it is going well, isn't it? It started January 1st, around that? Or?
We launched September 30th.
Oh, my goodness.
So we're almost at 6 months. Yeah.
Almost, 6 months. And things are going well. And it is a service that will be, if folks want to subscribe, be in their mailbox every morning, right?
That's right. You can find our work at TucsonSpotlight.org. We are completely free, no paywall.
Very good. Caitlin joins me as my media co-host. Each Friday, we try to bring in someone from the media to join me in the questioning of a newsmaker. And the newsmaker this week is Tim Tomier. Tim was appointed by the mayor and the Tucson City Council to be the City of Tucson City Manager pretty much a year ago next week. Tim had previously served as Deputy City Manager, Assistant City Manager, Director of Tucson Water for 5 years. He is a licensed professional civil engineer. He's been so, I think, Tim, for what, 30 years? Something like that?
Good afternoon, Bill.
And great to see you.
I've been in the industry for just over 30 years now.
Very good. And have you finished the PhD program at the Eller College?
I have not yet finished. I'm what they call ABD, so all the coursework's done, and I've passed my coursework defense, but I'm in the long slog of research phase. And
all right. Well, sooner or later here, Tim, we will be calling you Dr. Tim. All right. How are things going with the ballots being returned for an all-mail-in election for Proposition 414?
The daily amount of ballots coming in has been actually pretty strong, and that's publicly available information. I think we're close to 70,000 ballots have been cast, and on a single issue election like this in Tucson, that's a pretty strong number. The last day to mail in was on Wednesday, so we expect a couple more big days of mail coming in, and then people can, of course, drop off ballots at the voting centers right up until Election Day.
So I realize that in your role as city manager, you can't necessarily advocate for Proposition 414, but the passion has been very strong on both sides of this argument. Generally, can you explain to us kind of the 30,000-foot level about why this was necessary?
Sure. So, and in fact, it's the city's obligation and responsibility to provide information for anything that goes onto the ballot like this. The main drivers for why this was put on the ballot are under or unmet needs in the community. Quite a bit of the investment goes into first responders and public safety. There are needs for additional police officers, but also additional community service officers and other resources that serve the community directly. There's expressed needs for additional fire service in the form of a new station and additional fire personnel. And then kind of the bigger element of it is the housing crisis we have in Tucson. There's a lot of unmet needs in unsheltered homelessness, in opioid addiction and related issues that make it challenging for people to have housing security. And then just in addition to that, creating a safe and vibrant Tucson in the form of having early childhood education, workforce development, things that make and create opportunities economically and otherwise for Tucsonans to thrive.
All right, let's bring in Caitlin Schmidt. Go ahead, Caitlin.
What are we looking at if this doesn't pass? What does that look like for the city?
That's a great question. I'm expecting that we'll get that pretty often over the next couple of days. The immediate impact would be not a significant change in our level of service, at least for the next year. We've been making do with what we have today and the last few years, but there's some areas of stress that are just going to get a little bit more profound over the next year. In the case of our fire service, we're able to respond to calls. We're able to provide very good service. We are burning out our firefighters, quite honestly. So they're going on quite a bit, few more calls per shift than they really should be. And that means that not only are our response times, you know, dropping a little bit, which we don't like, but also the burden on our firefighters is increasing, and that stress is increasing. You can say similar things about police. And then within a year, we'll also be facing that some of the funding that's been available to do some of the programs that we've started in the last 3 years, like our Housing First program. These are data-informed strategies to address homelessness and in order to get people into housing security. And we've been able to allocate dollars from ARPA or COVID relief dollars in order to get those programs moving. Our goal would be to continue and then expand them and reach even more Tucsonans. But it's a double-edged sword in that not only do we want to expand it, which we wouldn't have the capacity to do, but those grant funds are starting to come to the end of their life.
So you're working on the approximately in the neighborhood of $2.4 billion financial program for the next fiscal year, which will begin July 1st. If it doesn't pass, Tim, will you have to do some revisions now with that program?
To a small degree. What I would say is that the vast majority of the $2.4 billion city budget are things that will continue on regardless of the outcome on 414. We own and operate Tucson Water. That will continue just as it is. It's funded by rates and fees, environmental services, our highway dollars that come that allow us to do transportation and mobility. And in addition, there's previously approved voter programs that will continue. So we will make good on all of our promises to the community. What we'll see is, so right now, as a snapshot in time, we have yet to bring in a budget that I can recommend that's a balanced budget yet. Right now, we're at about a $13 million deficit for next year. My job is to get that to zero, and we'll do that. It just becomes a little more challenging. And then it also becomes some choices that need to be made between, okay, how do I relieve, if Prop 414 doesn't pass, how do I relieve that pressure on the fire service and get some more resources into that? That's kind of come at the expense of resources that might go into other services.
All right, let me see if you can summarize, and I'm going to give you the three major arguments that folks put out against 414, and let's see if you can telescope your answer.
I like this game.
All right. I'm going to put top of the list raising the city sales tax to one of the highest in the state by a half cent. Don't answer yet, because I want you to combine all three in the interest of time. And then part two would be why did you and the team not, if these needs were so pressing, why were they not budgeted items before? And now three, if it passes, you would appoint an an oversight committee, and the charge would be that the books would be cooked. You would only appoint people who were going to be favorable to the program in the city. So there you go. Take off.
Okay. I hadn't heard that last one.
Okay.
It's interesting. So everything that would be invested under the program is a priority, and it exceeds our current capacity to deliver services. We have very limited control over our incoming revenues, and in fact, locally controlled revenues are the only ones that we have any flexibility with. And the state has taken away revenues from us. On top of these needs growing, the state implemented the flat income tax, which has reduced our revenues that come from, you know, these are Tucsonans' dollars going up to Phoenix that no longer come back to Tucson. So the ability to budget these priorities, we've been over many years running a very lean budget and having everything be driven to the highest priority it can, and the priorities exceed our revenues.
Okay.
Having said that, yes, it is a sales tax. Note that unlike some other cities, we don't have a food tax. We don't have a rental tax. So there are other revenues that other cities do use for these services that Tucson has already said, we do not want to have a food tax. We do not want to have a rental tax. Those are too regressive. Mm-hmm. So a sales tax is really the one tool left in the toolbox. So then you come to the oversight. If we collect these dollars, how do we assure that the voter is getting exactly what they promised?
Right. The money will go to where it has been purported to go.
And that
you're not going to move the money around to different areas.
Okay. That's correct. So that committee's charge is to make sure that, and the five different buckets and those percentages cannot be changed by me, the mayor and council, the committee. Those buckets and percentages are fixed by the voter, could only be changed by the voter. And then within those buckets, we published a what's called a community investments plan that outlined all the areas of expected spending within those buckets. So if the voters are interested in making sure firefighters have the apparatus they need and turnout gear they need, that is guaranteed. If they're interested in police officers having vehicles that are not from the last 20 years ago, that's guaranteed. If the voters are interested in having gap financing provided for housing projects, that's guaranteed. This oversight committee will be appointed in order to assure the voter that they get exactly what they were promised.
And the people that you appoint?
Those have not yet been determined.
Yeah.
And they will be selected based on their expertise in one or more areas and or the type of filter that they want to, that we think is important for them to apply. So there might be an equity filter, okay, a sustainability filter. In this case, unlike some of our committees, this one would not be appointed by the mayor and council. This one will be appointed by the city manager in consultation with the mayor and council and then ratified by the mayor and council. So the assurance that people have is it's not a politically motivated appointment. It is based on the expertise necessary to deliver these promises.
All right, here's Caitlin Schmidt.
So another argument that I have heard is that raising the sales tax is putting further financial strain on a lot of people who are already struggling to make ends meet with rising housing costs, with inflation. I mean, I understand these are critical services, but are we, again, putting an additional burden on people that are already being stretched to their limit in some cases?
That's a fair argument, and it is one that I think voters are certainly wrestling with. One of our folks that came, a neighborhood activist that came to our call to the audience the other night, was expressing that very same angst that he and his neighbors are having about times are tough and it's difficult to justify making that additional investment, which would equate to, like, if you're making a $100 purchase, it's a 50 cent additional charge on that purchase. To me, 50 cents on a charge is not a major impact. To many Tucsonans, it is. But his point was, we can't afford not to. So I don't want to come across as advocating. I'm really just trying to respond to your question. It's really the voters are going to decide if that level of increased cost, which doesn't apply to food and groceries and doesn't apply to your rent and some of your many major expenses, especially if you're living to paycheck to paycheck, what does Tucson look like without this investment? That's really the question.
All right, Caitlin, any more on 414, or can we move on?
I think we can move on.
Okay, let's take the break right here. This is kind of the natural place to take the break. Tim Tomier is here, the Tucson City Manager, and we're actually going to do all three segments today. There's so much to cover. So, Tim, you're going to be here for an extra 10 minutes.
Sounds good.
And then we will, of course, in segment four, have our weekend watch with our sister station. We love the 101.7 The Drive. Boy, they're doing well. That's our sister station here at Bustos Media. And they'll be, I think we've got Leslie Lois today, who will be giving us what's going on with weekend watch. Okay, Tom, on the other side of the glass, Tom has got a caller, actually, that is ready to go. So I'm questioning whether we will keep Jeff over. I think I've just made a executive decision here, Tim, and I think we're going to go to caller Jeff before the break. Okay, Tom, are you ready? Let's take caller Jeff right now. Jeff, can you hear me?
Yes, I can very well.
Okay.
Good morning.
Good morning, or good afternoon. You're up to the plate with Tim Tomier.
Okay. I just had a question then. If I were a young fellow and I applied to the fire department or the police department, would I have to get a COVID shot before I joined those departments? And that's all I have. Thank you.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, Jeff. At this point, no. There was a time early on in the pandemic where there was a vaccine mandate within the city. All of those issues have been litigated and or regulated to the point where right now that would be a non-issue for somebody applying to the job.
All right. We will now take the break. It's Buckmaster on a Friday, the Friday Focus interview with Tim Tomier, who is the city manager. And Caitlin Schmidt is here, the award-winning reporter when she was at the, not that she couldn't be an award-winning reporter now with her new enterprise. Boy, I really dug a hole on that one, didn't I? Not that she couldn't and probably will be an award-winning reporter with her new enterprise, the Tucson Spotlight. And I did want to mention in your intro, and I think it's important, that you were Sports Writer of the Year in 2019, that honor from the National Sports Media Association for your ongoing coverage of gender-based violence in the University of Arizona Athletic Department. So there you go.
Blast from the past there.
Well, who knows? There may be a big award waiting you down the road. All right, we'll see. We'll take a break.
Vero Amore, where every certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore is located in the lovely Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell. Also, check out the full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
The Regional Transportation Authority invests over $100 million annually in transportation improvements in the greater Tucson region based on public input. The RTA and its regional partners deliver roadway, transit, safety, pedestrian, bicycle, environmental, and other needed improvements to meet the demands of transportation network users over a 20-year period. Learn more about the economic and quality of life benefits of the RTA's 2006 voter-approved plan and flexible funding at rtamobility.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The News and Sun's media reach 75% of the region through newspapers, websites, social media, video, newsletters, and more. They also produce more than a dozen print and digital magazines annually for an audience of 70,000. Find them at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, covering your hometown.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. Travel is in my DNA. When I'm ready to start another adventure, my trip begins and ends at our local airport, Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. TUS, where it's made easy to fly. Start planning now for your next air adventure by visiting flytucson.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. It's our Friday Focus interview. Tim Tomier is here. Tim is the city manager, City of Tucson. Caitlin Schmidt is here, and her new enterprise is Tucson Spotlight, an ongoing service that comes out. Do you do a Sunday now kind of recap or no?
We do. Yeah, we have a Sunday recap and then Monday through Friday.
Monday through Friday, folks, it's free to subscribe online and will be in our listeners' mailboxes between around 6 o'clock in the morning. And they'll get also a summary on Sunday. So we're going to do three full segments today with Tim Tomier, since there is so much to talk about. Segment number one, pretty much devoted to Proposition 414, but there's a lot of other city business. There's a couple of issues that concern our utility, Tucson Electric Power. And there's confusion, Tim, about one, the big, I call them the saguaros, or the giant saguaro trees of poles. And those would be going down Campbell or something, is that right? The big poles?
There's a big potential infrastructure project. Campbell is one route.
Right.
Euclid is another route.
Sure.
So they've actually got a few different ways that could be routed.
Okay, so this is kind of getting mixed up with something else that's called a TEP franchise agreement, which went before to the voters to approve. Was it about a year ago, a little more than a year?
A little year and a half ago, yeah.
But this has to be done, correct? Well, why don't you summarize what these two items are all about?
Sure, and I'll start with Tucson Electric Power is not owned or operated by the city of Tucson.
Oh, so there has been talk of, well,
there's certainly talk of potential publicization or
there
municipalization of
okay.
it, but
okay.
That's a conversation ahead.
Yeah.
STEP does business in the city. Through a franchise agreement, they're able to just basically automatically do some things, occupy our right of way, put poles, put wires. Absent a franchise agreement, they'd actually go through a more burdensome permitting process, which makes them have to do things a little bit slower, and it's actually a burden on the city. So there are benefits to both the utility and the city of having a franchise agreement, and then the city does get financial benefit from it. The question is, I think before the voters, is does the city get enough benefit from it?
Oh, okay.
So that's one set of issues. As far as the big towers go and what their new, like, main siting issues are, we have some regulations in Tucson for either gateway or scenic corridors that mean that new power infrastructure would have to go underground. That's great from a viewshed standpoint. However, it's quite a bit more expensive for the utility, which is then passed on to the electric ratepayers. So the city is dealing with kind of four independent issues right now. One is a major project that could go up Keno or Euclid, and whether they would have to underground mm-hmm. at some of the intersections where those routes cross scenic corridors.
Mm-hmm.
That's one. We have the franchise agreement that expires in 26. So they have one or two more shots at getting that renewed.
Mm-hmm.
If it renewed, it doesn't mean the power goes down. It just means we have about another year to figure things out.
Mm-hmm.
But life gets very complicated if it doesn't get renewed at some point. And then there's a lot of questions about climate action or inaction and the decarbonization of the energy coming to Tucson. And since 60% of it used by the city actually comes from TEP. We have a climate action goal of getting that to carbon neutral. And so how can we go about doing that? Can we compel TEP? Do we enter into a parallel agreement where they agree to certain things? So all of that's really coming due at the same time. So those issues do overlap in time, and they're kind of distinct, but they're really bundled together in everybody's mind.
But I think it's safe to say that back at the office, your file on TEP continues to grow, right?
That's right. There's a lot going on with TEP, and they're a critical part of our community.
All right, let's bring in my friend Caitlin Schmidt.
Well, in the vein of TEP, isn't the city also looking into potentially branching out into their own public utility company, or there's a couple different options that you all are exploring?
That's correct. We're doing what's called an energy sources study. This was one of the action items under our Tucson Resilient Together Climate Action Plan. And so no decisions have been made, but we're looking at everything from the city purchasing TEP and running it as a municipal utility like Tucson Water, to the city partnering with TEP through different agreements where we can work together to bring renewable resources into the portfolio, to the potential for what we call a microgrid, where the city at a facility or a neighborhood could potentially set up its own solar array that doesn't necessarily feed to the grid like a lot of the traditional programs, but maybe creates its own hub of renewable energy servicing that area. So, and then the final one, and there's a lot of local climate activists interested in community choice energy. This is where on the power purchase side of things, the local community can take control of where TEP would get their power from. TEP would still transmit and distribute it around the community, but we could drive the portfolio of energy being provided. Currently illegal in the state of Arizona, but we are looking at it because things that are illegal now that are illegal in other states, you can mount a business case to the legislature to perhaps change that.
Mm. So actually your portfolio on TEP is growing.
It's significant and does take up a bit of the time.
How are we doing tourism-wise? We're in prime time still for tourism. I kind of set my tourism watch when the soccer shootout begins in January and then goes, of course, through the gem show, the golf tournaments, the rodeo, which celebrated its centennial. How are we doing?
From what I've been able to, so I don't directly measure that on a regular basis. I work with Felipe and visit
Felipe
Tucson.
Felipe Garcia at Visit Tucson, of course.
And when I've been meeting with him, I think it's remained strong. I've not been hearing that we've had year over year significant growth like we were for a while. I think it's been still kind of steady growth. You brought up the rodeo parade. That was my first time in it. Took 100 years, but I was able to join it.
Yeah, I saw something on Facebook. You had a hat and some kind of new, I think a new boots and the whole thing.
Neither of those new. I've had that hat for years. I did live in South Dakota for 8 years before I came to Tucson.
Okay.
I am all hat, no cattle, but not a stranger to wearing the cowboy hat or the cowboy boots. But but seeing all the faces and the great turnout, it was one of the largest crowds I've seen. Now, of course, for a centennial, you would expect that. Mm. But what we're seeing is still very strong tourism coming to Tucson. We keep getting named into the top 30 in the world locations for people to visit. Under all the magazines. And in fact, we were just recently named in the top 30 well-run cities in the country. I just want to throw that little plug in there. Tucson's still doing well.
What were some of the other cities? Just
The other Arizona city in a similar cohort was Mesa. And I think we can all tip our hat to Mesa. They've actually are pretty well known for being they have different priorities and different approaches than a Tucson, but similar fiscal responsibility and similar focus on customer service. Albuquerque is another top one. And then there's actually the upper Midwest. You see like Rapid City, South Dakota, Sioux Falls, South Dakota, Idaho cities like Boise. So we're actually a bigger city than most of the folks that are on that top of that list, but still well run and well rated, which I take great pride in because nobody's job is easy as a city manager. But when you have 100,000 people and they're affluent, that's a little bit different challenge than running Tucson.
Yeah, and Caitlin, I do, before I turn it back over to you with a question I wanted to ask Tim, because I know he is a huge hockey fan, and we've had AAA hockey here. While the home team for the Roadrunners went up to Utah. So what's the future of keeping a major league type team here?
That's still a high priority for the mayor and council and for us in city management. We do have last year when all of that broke loose and the Coyotes were folded up and ultimately given back to the league and the Utah Hockey Club was launched, the Tucson Roadrunners still remained the AHL affiliate to now the Utah Hockey Club.
So they still have the direct pipeline, but the pipeline is now not I-10. It's they'll fly the players from Tucson if they need them up to Salt Lake City.
That's correct. Or to wherever the team is playing.
Yeah.
So having the Tucson International Airport and direct flights to Salt Lake City was certainly a good basis for that. When we negotiated to keep them in Tucson last year, because they had talked about taking our Roadrunners up to Phoenix.
Right.
And we're like, good job, Phoenix. we want them to stay here.
Yeah.
We actually brokered an additional deal on the back end. We had an initial 10-year deal. Mm-hmm. We were able to add an 11th year. So there's actually two more years under contract from now, whereas we would have been looking at our last year potentially next year. So still remains our goal to keep an AHL affiliate here in Tucson. And we're very happy that the Utah Hockey Club is doing well. And the players that we take care of here in Tucson, they're doing well up in Salt Lake now.
Okay, Caitlin, it's all yours.
Boy, I hope we can keep that hockey team because I say those Roadrunner games are fun to go to. Mm-hmm. They are a good time.
It is a quality product too, isn't it?
It's very high-level hockey, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Shifting gears, I mean, the city is managing a lot right now, I think, between the election, what's happening with the federal government.
Roads.
And we're also now, it looks like, revisiting the permitting process for distributing food in parks. Can you talk a little bit about what's happening there?
That's a great point. So right now we're on the front end of what we call a community conversation. And you do public outreach in a variety of different ways. And sometimes it's more like, we're doing this and we want to inform you about it, or we're deciding whether to do something and we want your input. This is more of a very complex issue. We have stakeholders with very different perspectives. And on the surface of it, the goal is for people in need to be able to have access to food and water. The reality of it is where that happens, how that happens, the environment around those instances is complicated, and it does have an impact on city services, people's use of parks, other things. So rather than just keep doing the status quo, we decided, let's get everybody to the degree possible in the same room to talk through the issue in what we call dialogue circles, which allows people for different perspectives in a low-pressure environment to get together and have a safe place to share their perspective. But you work it together where you don't have people in their corners. Everybody's around tables where you have to have that conversation together. And almost always that dialogue circle approach leads to better understanding, maybe not always agreement, but at least understanding, and then maybe areas where multiple different perspectives can find agreement. So that's, we're really on the front end of that. I can't predict what the outcome will be, but I think it's of tremendous value to convene that discussion.
Here's a Facebook question. Tim, what's the latest on stopping the construction near the new Danny Lopez Park?
Good question. So that I'm glad they used the Danny Lopez Park. This is on North Silverbell. And there is construction that was on, there's two different projects, one that's been stopped on construction and one that has not been able to go to bid for construction. And just the quick background for those of you that aren't aware of the issue, that area is very adjacent to the Santa Cruz River. And in that area, it is not unusual to find artifacts from Tono Otom or Pascua Yaqui and those that dwelled here for millennia before we came and before the city was here. And so we have infrastructure that is in areas that could have cultural sensitivity or cultural remnants that we need to be understanding of and aware of. When we do a project, you have to do some initial work to survey to what could be there, and you should be doing monitoring while you're doing those projects. Well, the city was doing one project where they weren't doing adequate monitoring, and we own the fact that we didn't do that. So we've had to shut down that project, and we've been working with the regulatory agencies, the tribal nations of Arizona, the state state societies that govern antiquities and cultural resources in order to find a path forward. The process is stuck in the exact place where we have a lot of federal actions that need to occur, and we don't have actions being taken at the federal level. This is not meant to cast blame, but it's meant to point out that this uncertainty about federal action just isn't just about dollars and cents. It's about permitting. It's about environmental clearances. It's about having the federal partners in place that can guide you through a process. So we've been kind of stuck for about 5 months in that.
And this is a good point to ask, what is the impact now on the federal dollars for the city of Tucson?
So as far as federal dollars go, there's about $285 million of federal funding that's been awarded to the city but not yet used. We have contracts, and you draw them down over a period of time. Mm-hmm. Right now we have $285 million. I can't say it's all frozen because we do have some of the payment portals that are open and we're able to access them.
Would you call it, though, a trickle that at this point? Or
I think it's a little bit more than a trickle.
Okay.
So I am being very cautious. I'm also not being overly alarmed. Some are quite alarmed. I'm being a little bit more pragmatic about it because until I hear a no, I'm going to keep pushing the system. And we do have movement in enough areas that I feel like we're going to be okay in the long run, but the risk is still pretty high.
All right, let's go ahead now. Take the break. We'll come back with a third segment with the city manager, Tim Tomier. Caitlin Schmidt is here as well. We haven't talked about roads. We got a lot of things still to cover with Tim. In probably we'll have about 8 minutes for segment number three. Take the break. This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat.
Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, segment three. Normally, we do segment three. I talk a bit with my co-media host, but I have so much for Tim Tomier, the city manager, that Caitlin Schmidt of Tucson Spotlight, I don't want to shortchange you, but I do want to say for people who are getting in and out of the car, people may be wondering, what is Tucson Spotlight? Why don't you give us the quick overview?
Yes, we are a new nonprofit newsroom that launched at the end of September. Our focus is on undercovered issues and mm-hmm. topics, and we really aim to amplify the voices of new, emerging, and diverse journalists. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of bilingual coverage. I think we just published our 150th story in Spanish. So
wow.
We are really trying to help fill in some of those gaps in coverage.
You're helping some young journalists too, aren't you?
Yeah, yes. I did not realize when we launched, but there just aren't enough opportunities for student interns. And mm-hmm. so we really wanted to create a hub where they could get published, where they can learn about how the city works and take those skills and move on with them.
All right, Tim, let's try to cover a couple of important topics. I'll just throw it out to you. Transportation, include in your remarks what the city is doing, and then the program about RTA, the Regional Transportation Authority, as they move toward their program called RTA Next. Try to summarize that for me.
Can do. So right now the city has a high priority on delivering its promises under Proposition 411, which was enacted in 2022 to make improvements to every neighborhood street in Tucson. And that was over a 10-year period. And we are about 25% complete with that project, either complete or under construction right now. So the delivery of neighborhood roads under Prop 411 is going extremely well. In addition, under that same program, we're doing improvements to some of our collector streets, Stella, Tucson Boulevard, Bilby. So you're going to see some of those projects complete. And there were safety improvements, additional hawks, protected bike lanes. So a lot of movement as funded by the Tucson voter on Prop 411. When you get to our larger arterial streets, the last 20 years, that's been focused on major projects under the Regional Transportation Authority. So we have had large projects completed or completing. Downtown Links in the downtown area is a major one coming to completion. We've done Broadway, we've done elements of Grant, but there are a number, at least a dozen projects yet to be completed in the city under RTA, what we call RTA 1, which is leading to your next question.
Sure.
But the biggest uncertainty right now is the RTA going to be able to deliver all of its promises mm-hmm. to voters. The city's a part of that, mm-hmm. But it's the umbrella of the RTA, which is a regional transportation authority that has that responsibility.
But you like what you're seeing about the city's portion of RTA Next.
For RTA Next, yes. Which is out for public comment right now,
yes.
I would say it's the minimal viable product for this city.
Okay.
What I like about it is it includes some things that are different than RTA 1, including mm-hmm. capital reconstruction, which allows us to not just have every new project be a wider road. We can make existing roads better.
Mm-hmm.
That is a major win. What is a little bit concerning is 65% of the taxes are collected in the city, but only 50 to 55% of those taxes would go toward benefits to the city.
Mm-hmm.
It's a tension because it's a regional plan, and there's always good that comes out of regional approach to planning,
mm-hmm.
But I think voters are going to have to decide when that goes to the ballot, are they getting the value they need from what they're contributing?
Okay, Caitlin, what's on your questions to ask?
Well, I guess I'm curious about, we have a short amount of time, like you had said, to get this RTA Next on the ballot. What happens if it doesn't make it in November, it doesn't make it until next March or the following November? What does that look like for the city?
If RTA Next doesn't get to the ballot and get renewed in a timely fashion, like within the next year, that tax would sunset. And then you're talking about a different ask of the voter, which is to reinstate and or a new tax versus an extension of a tax. So there's some complications there. The practical outcome is the same, whether you extend it or renew it. There's a timing issue with regard to when a new tax of that nature can go into effect. It's now like the next April 1st of a year, which could create a gap in financing depending on when it happens. And also there's annual benefits to the community that are paid out of RTA-NEC. So it's not just about building things. There's about $16 million a year that comes to the city to help with transit service. That would go away for a period of time, in which case the city would have to adjust service or adjust its revenues.
Are the buses conduits for crime here in the city, the free buses?
There's anecdotal folks talking about that.
Yeah.
The trends really aren't that there. When you look at actual data and assaults that happen on buses, they do happen. They happen everywhere, and they happen on buses. There's not been an increase in assaults, not an increase in assaults on drivers. There's been, initially, there was a need for additional guidance and expectations of riders that bus drivers can now use, limiting the number of things a person can come on. You can't bring your six shopping carts onto the bus. And being able to ban people from the ride if they're misbehaving. So I think we're at a point where that is not necessarily a trend that's increasing. Anecdotally, actually, we find most people that ride the bus find it to be a good experience. We always will need to make the environment better, and especially our bus stops. That's one of our, you know, you should have shade, you should have an ability to get out of the sun. But we've not been able to connect rider crime or an increase to that to that.
All right. Outcome. As the quarterback of the show and time manager, I should end it right here with Tim, but I've got a caller on the live line, our Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management live line. Jenny, real quickly, what is your question for Tim, please?
Thank you very much. To the speaker, I wondered, I heard all about the roads. I just wondered if he has personally driven down Fifth Street near Craycroft area, and if he has personally driven down Columbus Boulevard, which is a major street, all the way from Pima to Camp Lowell. Has he driven on those two streets, and what's the status on those?
Okay, and I can personally say that Columbus really needs work. But go ahead, Tim.
Hi, Jenny. I can say I've driven both of those stretches, or a fifth more than Columbus. Both Fifth Street and Columbus are collector streets. Now, there is some, which means they're not, quote, neighborhood streets. So they fall under a slightly different program, but we are doing some work on collector streets. Fifth Street, Fifth, Sixth, there's a couple of projects coming, a Prop 407 project and a Prop 101 project that'll be doing some improvements along Fifth and Sixth. Columbus, I honestly don't know where that's at in the program, but that is something that if you go to our Tucson Delivers website, you should be able to find information on Columbus. And if I come up with anything else, I'll share it with Bill.
All right. Very good. Tim Tom, you're always a pleasure. My very best to you and your family, and especially one of my favorite cats, the black cat, Jack the cat. How is Jack handling everything these days?
Jack's doing pretty well. I am away from the house a fair amount.
Really? You're not working from home with Jack?
Not as much. No. For a couple of years there, Jack and I got to be really close working at home. But he's got mama, so he's doing okay.
Yeah, he is. All right. Thanks. Good to see you, Tim.
Thank you, Bill.
And then Caitlin Schmidt, TucsonSpotlight.com?
.org.
Oh, okay, .org. thanks for coming in, Caitlin. Always a pleasure to see you.
Thank you, Bill.
All right, coming up next, Weekend Watch, some great tips for having a delightful weekend. I'm planning on having a great weekend. Hope you will, too. 101.7 The Drive with Weekend Watch right after this.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
Located in the heart of Arizona wine country, about an hour south of Metro Tucson, Flying Leap Estate Vineyards Winery and Distillery Facilities are one of the most beautiful wine venues in the southwestern United States. Come relax and unwind at our spacious property and learn about Arizona grape viticulture and winemaking from our team of trained sommeliers and discover the intricacies of the art of distillation. Learn more at flyingleapvineyards.com. The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan is funded by a half-cent sales tax through June 2026. The funding has led to a $1.6 billion investment in regional transportation improvements over the past two decades to improve your quality of life. The RTA is working on a final draft of a new regional transportation plan for future voter consideration. The $2.46 billion draft plan includes roadway, transit, safety, bicycle, pedestrian, environmental, and other needed improvements. Learn more at rtanext.com. Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
This is your captain speaking. Thank you for flying with Tucson International Airport, where you can avoid the hassles, long lines, and the expensive parking of the Phoenix Airport. Skip the traffic, breeze through security, and park with ease, all while supporting your community. Every flight from TUS brings more destinations and better connections right here to Tucson. So next time you're planning a getaway, remember, fly easy, fly local, fly TUS. This is your captain signing off. We're cleared for takeoff.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rialto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Time for Weekend Watch. Weekend Watch with 101.7 The Drive, presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Only about a three-hour drive east of Tucson, Silver City in Grant County makes a great weekend getaway. Start your planning now for an enchanting time in the land of enchantment. Visit their fine website, southwestnewmexico.org. Leslie Lois is here from 101.7 The Drive. Hey, Leslie, how are you?
Well, hi. I am good. Thank you.
Congratulations on your promotion, the award last night. Local Advertisers honored The Drive with a silver second place, but hey, it's right up there
exactly.
For self-promotion. You guys did a great job.
Thank you for our Summer of Legends that we did over the summer, last summer. So yeah, that was pretty cool.
All right. What's going on this weekend?
Well, the big golf tournament, the Color Guard Classic going on. It started today. I don't know how the weather affected it too much, but if you want to go, it's La Paloma Country Club is where it's going to be. 10 o'clock tomorrow morning and again on Sunday. Tomorrow is around 2. Sunday is the final round. Both start at 10 a.m. So if you want to go check out some golf, but if you want to go check out some art, the Oro Valley Spring Festival of the Arts is going on. Now, this is both for both Saturday and Sunday. It's 10 to 5 tomorrow and then 10 to 4 on Sunday with over 120 vendors that range from photography to candles to fine art. And I mean, inflatables, live music, face painting, a planting station, so many things they've got going on.
So, did you say candles?
Yes.
Oh, very cool. Okay.
I know. And if you're a music lover, especially bluegrass, the Desert Bluegrass Festival is going on. That is happening at the Gladden Farms Community Park over on Tangerine Farms Road. That's happening. It started today, actually, is free attendance. And then it's $25 for Saturday and Sunday, or you can get a $40 pass. There's going to be 9 bands over the 3 days to perform, and they're going to have lots of fun stuff going on. So if you are a fan of bluegrass, definitely check that out.
I think I heard one of your promotions on The Drive about the festival. There's even a workshop about bluegrass.
Yes.
Songwriting. So if you're a budding bluegrass songwriter, this would be an opportunity to get some inside tips.
Yes.
On how to do it.
And baseball and softball weekend again. Our U of A men's softball, they won last night against Pepperdine. They're taking them on the next 3 days, tonight at 6, tomorrow at 6, and then Sunday at noon. And the women's softball is taking on UCF tonight and through Sunday at Hillebrand Stadium.
No shortage, Leslie Lois, of things to do. And we will look for your work. We enjoy it very much. along with the whole team at 101.7 The Drive. I'm a big fan, and I think all of our listeners should be as well.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that.
All right. The Buckmaster Show is a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, which is wholly responsible for the content of our program. Original theme music by our German friend, Christophan. Thanks to Rose Brandt, who does all of our podcasts, make sure they're up in a timely fashion. Of course, Tom Fairbanks on the other side of the glass. Everybody here at KVOI and Bustos Media, have a great weekend.